It is.
Cool. Good. All right. Ready?
There you go.
You bet. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, August 21st. I would ask the audience to join us as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And a reminder, because of the audio, if you do have a cell phone, if you would put it on silent mode or turn it off, we would appreciate it. Okay. Item three is the public comment. This is an opportunity for people to address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that wants to comment a topic on today's agenda? Okay. All right, seeing no one, then we'll move on. Consideration of the minutes of 8-14-12.
Move approval.
Second.
Been moved and second. Then no corrections or changes. So all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Okay. Next item is consideration of personnel action. We have several here. Are there any questions regarding personnel actions?
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The approval of personnel action. No further discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Okay. On the consent agenda, please add road closure number 1316 through number 1319. And utility permit number 1322 and 1323. Okay, otherwise all other items are good to go.
Move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
It's been moved and second. The approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. Stute?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. And then moving on to other reports.
Public hearing first.
Public hearing item, number seven. Good. Okay. Consideration of Resolution 1310, Budget Amendment, Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The budget amendment that I have in front of you was published in all three papers on August 9th as required by law. The expenses being amended are primarily funds that were planned for FY12 but ended up in the carryover funds because of projects and or purchases timing. That includes sheriff's vehicles and equipment, conservation land purchases and grant spending, final payment on furnishings at the Human Services Center, the Heartland request for mobile congregant meals. They came to you right after the end of the fiscal year. YSS requested amount from June, and CDBG watershed grant and TIF projects. Overall, the expenses are being amended by 2.96%. Revenues being amended are mainly grant dollars and or fund balance. Overall, the revenues are being amended by 0.43%. After the amendment, the general supplemental ending fund balance will be about 19.3%, mental health 7.6%, and rural 10.10%.
Did you say 7.6?
Yeah.
Okay.
Understand that I'm not doing anything at this point in time with the mental health funding. I did not lower the revenues by the $2 to $4 million we may not get, and I did not lower the expenses because we've made that decision. We're just going to see what happens at this point in time.
Yep.
So I'm not amending anything. We just know what the situation is with the fund balance.
All right. Okay.
Any questions of me?
Okay. Nope, not at this time. At this time, then I will open a public hearing and ask if there's anyone that wants to speak to this item. Okay. Hearing no one, I will close the public hearing. Board, what is your pleasure?
Move approval of Resolution 1310.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1310. Roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1310 is adopted. And now we have to come for consideration of 1311, which is the appropriation amendment. Again, Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley.
What I would like to do is appropriate 100% of the dollars that we are amending today. You will recall that when you originally appropriated dollars to all the departments, you appropriated 50% of the budgeted dollars. So this amendment just is 100% of this amendment, not 100% of the dollars being amended. Is that clear as mud for you? Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason for the amendment was we need to spend this money, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can read those departments and the amounts if you would like me to.
Probably wouldn't be bad to have it in the record, yes.
Attorney is being amended by $10,260, the sheriff by $15,000, general county betterment by $78,600, secondary roads by $84,609, conservation by $392,744, HSC by $27,000, facilities by $23,500, juvenile court by $12,575, and countywide by
$546,550. Okay. With that, are there any questions for Lisa? All right.
I'll move approval of Resolution 1311.
Second.
Been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1311, the appropriation amendment. Hearing no further comments. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1312 is adopted. Okay. All right. And then moving on down to next item is consideration of 1312, the inter-fund operating transfer. Okay. Again.
When the budget is when the original budget was certified and implemented, in that we had two interfund operating transfers. I just haven't had you do the resolution for that money to be moved. So what I'm asking is that we actually by resolution approve the moving of the transfers of money from general basic to secondary roads not to exceed $430,000 and from rural services to secondary roads not to exceed $1.665,000.
Question just procedurally, whether the resolution comes before or at the point of actually moving these transfers, does it really make a difference? You know, when we earlier talked about moving forward, knowing full well that this would be the case?
These actual interfund operating transfers are what was originally budgeted
right
in the FY13 budget.
Okay.
The only way that the transfer can occur, even though you budgeted it, is by resolution of the Board of Supervisors. So typically what I do when I do the original appropriation at the very beginning of the year, I go ahead and have you sign this also. I just had not had you put this resolution in front of you yet.
Right.
If there's any additional transfers that you will be doing, then that will be in that separate resolution I will bring to you as an amendment.
Yeah. All right. Great. All right. Thank you. Okay.
And move approval of Resolution 1312.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1312. Are there further discussion? Hearing none. Roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1312 is adopted. Okay. Moving on down the agenda. Next up is consideration of the County Board of Health recommendation to adopt a public notification policy for proposed animal feeding facilities. Environmental Health Director Margaret James. Okay, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Mark.
On August 7th, the Story County Board of Health had their regular meeting and discussed the public notification policy for large animal feeding operations. And the reason it was brought to their attention is because they are the bosses of the Environmental Health Department. So the Board of Health recommends that the Board of Supervisors adopt the following policy for public notification for large animal feeding operations. So upon receiving a manure management plan or permit application for a new feeding operation larger than 500 animal units or the expansion of a facility larger than 500 animal units, the Environmental Health Department shall, in a timely fashion, notify all property owners within 2 miles of the facility, and if that property is within city limits, the city will be notified in lieu of the property owner. We will also post large animal feeding operation proposal information on the department website. We'll post it on your agenda. And then application materials will be available at the Environmental Health Department. And then when possible, a sign will be posted, similar to a planning and zoning sign. A sign will be posted at the property of the proposed feeding operation, and we will get the property owner's permission or talk to Darren and get the engineer's permission to put it in the right of way. And this this policy is in addition to the requirements that we have for public notification when there's a master matrix.
What's the number again of animal units that trigger the master matrix?
500. 500 animal units, and that is 1,250 finishing hogs. That's the same, the equivalency.
Yeah, but what triggers the master matrix?
A construction permit.
Construction permit.
Yeah.
That's over that.
Yeah. Whoa. We just did a bunch of confinement facilities that were under 2,000, right?
How big a facility does it have to be before it triggers the master
Thank
matrix?
You.
Animal units.
Let's see. So 12. It's double that. So it's 2,500, I believe.
Above that. Yeah, that's right. Because the ones that we approved were below that.
Or 2,496 or whatever.
So 2,500.
That's hogs. So animal units. It's more like. Because cows count different than hogs.
A cow is one animal unit.
And hogs, finishing hogs are 0.4.
Okay. All right. So this backs it up. Right now, we would notify everybody just like this if it triggered the master matrix. This backs it up to where basically any confinement operation of any size, we're going to notify the surrounding landowners.
Currently, we are only required for master matrix level to post a notification in the newspaper. We are not required to mail any notifications. So this does bump it up quite a bit.
Okay. What kind of cost are we talking about to be able to do this? Any estimations at all on that?
Not a lot. We'll have the cost of the sign, the metal sign, and $50 per mailing, $50 to $100 per mailing at the most.
And how many of these would we have had last year? In the last year, if we had had this policy in place, roughly?
Five.
So depending upon the numbers we have, you know, we may not need to have a budget amendment at some point. We'll probably be able to resolve that within your existing budget. But we will have a baseline to take a look at when we go into the FY13 budget proposal to kind of figure out whether or not we need to bump up that mailing cost as you plan. As you know, so that's just something to keep in mind. Okay.
I guess I was wondering if there's any way we could charge the animal feeding operation applicant for the cost of mailing.
It is my understanding, and I could be wrong, that currently right now there is not a provision, you know, for that. But that's something we can certainly look at. I do know that this was a topic that I discussed with the supervisors of the exec board when we met a couple weeks ago, last week actually. And we also know that the Iowa Association of Counties will be meeting with Director Gibb, talking about CAFOs and animal feeding operations at our November fall school. He's going to be on the agenda, and this will also be a topic that will be discussed, and might want to encourage you, if you are available, to sit in on part of that meeting that we'll have. Okay.
This is just for new or expanded. It doesn't count, because quite often we get a updated manure management plan from someone who's already got a facility in place.
That's correct, yeah.
I think it's the right thing to do. I think notifying, you know, we ran into the situation where we had one going in and people found out about it from a third party, and sometimes that can create more problems than need to be caused. And I think it's the right thing to do to notify people who own property within any area. I mean, that's our role in this thing. We don't get to make the decisions, but we get to listen to what the public has to say about it. Part of that, I think, is notifying them. I appreciate you guys putting together this policy.
That was what we took the most flack over, is that the county didn't notify anybody.
And rightly so. Yeah.
But, okay. So any further comments to Margaret regarding this? So basically this is a policy that is before us for to be able to move forward with this process. So it's not in the form of a resolution, but it's a policy.
Okay.
All right. So with that, I'd entertain a motion for consideration.
Both these out there, for this one out for 7 days like we do the other ones, or
well,
comment, or?
I don't. This doesn't involve departmental reaction at all, to my knowledge. I think it's since we have County Attorney Stephen Holmes, could we ask that question? This policy, in my opinion, isn't the same as one that is going out, which will impact decisions made by the various department heads like we would normally do from a countywide perspective. But since this is more of an administrative type of a policy that involves mailing of notification, would this require 7-day review is the question. Mike, maybe just, I know you're putting you on your spot, but just to put it on the record, if you could just speak into the microphone, please. We can do it either way. I'm just...
As I understand this, this is just simply keeping people informed.
Right.
This is just simply notice.
Right.
There is no statute about that. We could choose to do it 24 hours before, 7 days before, 2 weeks before, a month before. I don't think there's any kind. There isn't anything, because the onus is entirely on us. Speaking about the cost of it, because it is on us, I would advise against attempting to recover costs from any private landowner.
Okay. All right. So.
I think we should just we've sent other policies around for a 7-day review. I don't know why we wouldn't send this one out.
Sure.
Like comments. So I'm going to move approval of this policy pending the 7-day review.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for consistency's sake to approve this policy pending 7-day review. Does that mean at the end of that 7 days that it will come back for a final notation, or will it be effective if we don't receive any, you know, comments?
No, we'll deal with it again on our next agenda.
All right. So, hearing no further discussion, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Well, thank you, Margaret, and also thank you, and also extend our appreciation to the board for considering this a notification policy. We appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. Okay. With that, then, we will move forward to the next item for consideration, and that is item 5 under 4, excuse me.
The TIF.
Yes, summary of House File 2460, change to the TIF law and reporting requirements. Rick and Jessica, thank you.
We had a meeting last week, included Lisa and Jessica and Stacy Herridge, myself, and Bob Johnson joined us on the phone just to try to make sure that we're all on the same page and fully understand the changes to the requirements in reporting TIF as one topic, and then the second part of that topic is making sure that we come up with a good solid policy and procedure for determining how we're going to handle TIF in the future. I mean, clearly we did those three projects. We're going to talk here in a minute about expanding one of those projects in the bike lanes, but we wanted to make sure we were all getting on the same page and how we're doing it. And then finally, the third part, as I recall, part of that conversation was figuring out exactly how we're going to fund those TIF dollars, whether it's going to be through bonding or some kind of a line of credit with a bank. And so just working all of those, but we wanted to make sure we got it on the agenda to keep the full board informed of how we're moving. And with that, I'd turn it to Jessica to fill in the gaps that I'm sure I left.
Thank you, Rick. Yes, I was involved in a meeting, as Rick specified, regarding the changes to TIF reporting requirements. And House File 2460 is basically going to make things more onerous for the auditor. There are a lot of requirements regarding reporting. Basically, at this point, the state doesn't have a lot of information about how different counties are using TIF funds, and so they've developed new reporting requirements for counties. And our auditor has been on top of this, and our deputy auditor have attended various sessions regarding their reporting requirements and seem to be up to speed on those. And I'm available, obviously, if there's any issues with that. A new state agency has been made, and they're going to compile this information and then have that available so that counties and the public can see how TIF funds are being spent. And that's really the crux of the reporting requirements that have been added in this new House file legislation. So after our meeting, I feel confident that the deputy auditor is up to speed on those requirements and is compiling that information for the state as necessary.
So basically, at this time, all we're doing is just an update regarding the reporting requirement and the ongoing preparation that we're taking locally to be in tune with what they are. Okay. Are there additional questions for you to...
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for you guys to be aware of is I think Jessica and I are going to work pretty hard over the next couple weeks to bring us back a hard and fast policy of how we finish off this year in terms of any TIF consideration. I'll remind you guys of the December 1st deadline, which all debt has to be certified if we're going to be able to collect those TIF dollars, those revenues. Lisa put together a nice spreadsheet which showed us the amount of TIF revenue that we can expect over the next couple years and how that would go to service any debt we might have. So really, this is just the forewarning that over our next four or five meetings, you can expect to talk about TIF a heck of a lot.
Okay, sounds good.
Can't wait. It's exciting.
Okay, so this is just a summary and point of information, so no action, I believe, is
no
required
action
at this
either.
Time. Okay, thank you. Moving to item 5. Consideration of Resolution 1313, support for the Indian Creek Greenbelt Trail Country Club Extension. Rick, you have been actively engaged in meetings with City of Ames and maybe some of the Trail Advisory Committee as well.
Did I say Ames?
Yes, City of Nevada. Yep. Thank you for the clarification. Take it away.
Yeah, I just remind you guys that one of the three TIF projects that we approved was adding bike/walking/jogging lanes to existing Country Club Road, really running from inside the Nevada city limits all the way out south to Nevada Country Club. Part of that is within the city limits of Nevada, and so we're just trying to figure out how to fund this thing. We did have some grant dollars come through. There are a substantial amount of pledges from the residents that live out there to help pay for this thing, but our original $100,000 pledge was not going to be enough to even believe that we were going to get close to covering it. There's lots of moving parts to this, but one of the things that I didn't feel was reasonable was to expect the county to pick up a greater percentage of their portion of the improvements than the city of Nevada was willing to pick up for their portion. Now, their portion's much smaller than ours. I see Darren's latest estimate here. And, Darren, I'd ask you to come on up because we need to talk through the estimate and where we are on some of these grant dollars. But the estimate's $488,000 for a total project. You can expect the city of Nevada's portion to be somewhere in the $50,000 to $60,000 of that total project. The rest falls out in the county. What I suggest to the city of Nevada is we've all got to be on the same team. And if you're coming to the county and asking us to increase our percentage of the total project, and if you say $200,000 of a $400,000-plus project to almost 50%, then the city of Nevada ought to be willing to do the same. They had originally pledged up to $10,000 to complete their portion, which is just over $50,000. They have a resolution before their county council, which would increase their commitment to $25,000. So, again, a similar percentage to what's being asked for from the county. The real moving part to this that I can see is we're not sure about the SERPTA grant. We know we got a good SERPTA grant awarded. We just don't know that we're going to actually realize those dollars. And clearly, if those don't come in, then all bets are off. That's what we're trying to reflect in this resolution. And what the city of Nevada is trying to reflect is, okay, we at Story County will do the same kind of thing that the city of Nevada is talking about doing. As long as the SERPTA grant and everything else comes through, Nevada's saying we'll match what Story County's doing as long as the SERPTA, in terms of percentage, as long as the SERPTA grant and everything else comes through. It still leaves some dollars necessary to be fundraised by the group out there. I mean, this does not get us to where we've got the entire project covered, but there was a feeling among that group that we needed to solidify that the county and the city were going to participate at a level that was going to allow this to realistically get done with a little additional fundraising from private citizens. Darren, would you add anything to that?
That sounds correct. I ran some numbers on the money or the funds that have already been raised or expect to be raised. Assuming Nevada bumps up to $25,000 from the original $10,000, and we get $45,000 in private donations, with my updated estimate, we're looking at somewhere around $260,000 left.
Talk a little about the SERPTA grant and where we stand on that.
We thought that was a done deal when we originally got it, but then the feds passed a new transportation bill, and that threw a lot of things kind of unknown. One, when the feds pass a bill, it seems like they take a lot of time to write the bill after it's passed, yet the administrative type rules. Two, they also give the state the authority to do with what they want with the new enhancement program, which has been reduced by 35%. So that's one option the state could do is cut our $126,000 back by 35%, or they could eliminate it completely in it. I still don't really have a time frame on when they're going to. It's a combination of state and federal coming up with those new rules, and there's really no time frame to when they're going to decide that.
Darren, since we both serve on that SERPTA board and so forth, my question is what can the city of Nevada or the citizens group do towards communicating with the state regarding the funding for this particular project? Normally, when proposals are submitted to SERPA, you know, it's presented there, but then it's up to the SERPA board basically to forward that to the state. Is that correct, or does the citizens have a direct opportunity to convey the collaboration? And what I'm seeing right here, there's a partnership hopefully, and that is a private fundraising effort, the city of Nevada as well as the county, along with the rewarding of the grant dollars. So my question comes back to if money is potentially could be reduced, knowing that this is the amount that we have, is there an avenue by which citizens can voice their appreciation or hopeful support from the state that those funds are designated towards that project?
I don't want to say the DOT won't take any input, but I doubt they're going to look at these as project by project. They're looking at setting a policy for how they're going to distribute enhancement funds. So we can relay our message, and I already have asked immediately when that bill got passed what it would do to our $126,000. I just haven't gotten any answers back. They've responded with, we don't know. So
when are they going to know?
They don't know.
They don't know.
Oh.
We have SERPA next month again. I'll ask again what the time frame is, but it really hinges on what the state decides. It's not just enhancement. It's the road and bridge funding. The state doesn't have to give the county any of it. So they're probably looking at everything again. Do we still want to give the county the same amount?
So it's a little difficult, even assuming that the dollars would be available, it's a little difficult to put a construction timetable out there yet with the uncertainty of the funding right now. We would have to have a more of a firm handle on whether or not those funds would be secure. Is that correct?
Correct, and I'll contact the DOT representative again and try to push him to get an answer by our next SERPA meeting so we can discuss it there. But that's as quick as I think we'll at least have a preliminary answer.
Okay.
Once those grant dollars are awarded, how long, if they're awarded now, how long do we have to spend them?
General is 3 years. They have extended that if needed, so there's plenty of time to get it spent.
But I'll remind you, even if the grant dollars are maintained and we pass our resolution doubling our commitment to the project and Nevada passes their resolution more than doubling, 2.5 times their original commitment, we're still looking at $50,000 to $60,000 that has to be raised either through private donations or additional grant funding, or in some way. We're still not home yet. We just believe this at least gives us a chance to get home. And I saw Laura walk in. Laura, I'd ask you to come up if you get anything you want to address in all of this. Now would be the time.
Back then, loans.
Just to clarify, that $260,000 I mentioned, that included the $100,000 you already committed to. So that
That's right,
leaves Bob. About $160,000 left.
Okay.
$45,000 of private donations pledged towards the project for a total of $427,000. Comparing that to the total project cost, $446,000, that would be a funding gap of $19,000 yet. That's assuming that all of the private donations these people still want to give in the future come. So one of the key enablers, I think, to going out and getting the rest of that would be definitely that we will apply for more grants. We can go, because of the timeline, we can go back and we can apply for some of the grants that we might have been declined in the past. We can also apply for new grants that may have come up. But also we can go back to our private donors. And if the county and the city both commit to their portion of the funding, it makes it easier for us to get money from the private donors, because the biggest stumbling block is, well, will they really fund it or not? So that will be a key enabler, and then obviously the SERPA grant. I mean, at the end of the day, if you decide to do your amount and the city does their amount and we've got the private donations, if we don't get the SERPA amount to come through, it's not going to happen unless some miracle happens.
Right.
So we're really close to getting all of the pieces of a moving puzzle put in place, and it's just a matter of the last minute, which I think is the hardest part of all.
Yeah, and Laura, I just need you to update your numbers. We've got a new estimate, a new cost estimate with asphalt going up, and it's $460,863. With a, if you add a 6% contingency in there, it's all the way up to $488,000.
I think we had a contingency at one point, and then an inflation factor.
Yeah, we originally did, our investment was over a year old, so I checked with our local contractor to try to tighten up the numbers, and this is what they gave me. So,
so that doesn't include 6% inflation, though, because at one point we had 6% inflation, I think.
The 488 includes a 6% contingency, yeah.
Okay. Just before board we take any action on this, Conservation Director Mike Cox is here, and I do know that the Conservation has been heavily engaged in communication and discussion regarding improved trails, bike lanes, and things of that nature to also enhance quality of life opportunities. Mike, is do you have anything that you'd want to add at this time? I hate to put you on the spot, but I think I am correct to say that conservation is certainly supportive of this particular avenue if funding and everything comes through. Am I correct in that assumption? Okay. Great.
Okay. Well, it's up to us. I mean, this doesn't get us to the end. Clearly, we are the lion's share of the funding for this project from any one group, no matter how you slice it. Like Laura said, in order for her and her group to finish off the work they need to do, it would be highly helpful if they had some form of affirmation that we were going to participate at this level. As I understand it, the City of Nevada will deal with this at their next meeting, so this isn't going to sit out there very long. The SERPTA grant, we don't have any idea when that's coming through, but it at least kicks this to the next level where we've got a chance to get this done, and that's the rationale behind bringing the resolution forward.
And it also is helpful that if this is the direction that we choose to go and the city as well, when this is presented to SERPTA, knowing that we do have the city and county, you know, supportive of this initiative, I think all of those things are big factors as we move forward. So
yeah, and I'd be remiss if I didn't echo that, Wayne, and say I'm really appreciative. In the last meeting we had with the City of Nevada, really stepping up. Like I say, it's 2.5 times what their original commitment was. It does feel like a true partnership in trying to get this done. It's a unique model for trying to do something like this that I think would benefit a lot of different entities if we can go ahead and get this done. And so I would encourage passage of Resolution 1313.
I assume that's a motion. So.
It can be.
Yeah.
If it is, I'll second it.
It's a motion. It's been moved and seconded. The move forward with Resolution 1313 as indicated. Are there further discussion or the comments? One comment I would make is, Rick, I personally want to thank you on behalf of Paul and I for your taking the lead on behalf of the county, working with citizens of Nevada and also the city in this particular project. So it's very much been appreciated. So with that, roll call, Sanders.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Resolution 1313 is adopted, and we will continue the process, and we'll keep Laura and everyone informed as this project moves forward. Okay, thank you. Okay, item 6 is a consideration of asset recommendation regarding a HRDA's application to participate in the asset process. Deb Shilroth.
Hi, Deb.
Ah.
Great. Very good, very good. Okay, good. Oh, I can't even read this.
Yeah, notice the data.
Right.
Okay, just a little background on public transportation here in the county. It's organized through HRDA, which is the Heart of Iowa Regional Transit Agency. And what's not part of this is the SiRide service that's offered through the City of Ames, but it would be all the other transportation that's been historically provided by Heartland Senior Services. So it's provided within all of the communities and throughout the county for folks who need that particular service. And HRDA is formed through a 28E agreement of 7 counties that includes Story, Boone, Dallas, Madison, Marion, Warren, and Jasper counties. And the way HRTA has been operating is that they subcontract the transportation services within each county. So the counties kind of decide who they want within their county to provide the direct transportation services. And Heartland Senior Services has historically been that provider here in Story County. Throughout fiscal year 12, HRTA took a good hard look at all of their services but focused on transportation as to whether or not it was a service they could continue providing. And last spring, their board of directors decided it was something they would discontinue as of July 1st of 2012, so this fiscal year. And so they gave notification to the funders and to HRTA, and at that point in time, the HRTA board had decided that they would provide the service directly through the HRTA agency. And this was a decision that they made and started doing in Jasper County about 2 or 3 years ago. And it was successful, so they wanted to give it a try in Story County and see if it could be just as much of a success. So they moved forward on that, and the direct service provision started July 1st of 2012. The action that ASSET needed to consider was within the ASSET policies and procedures, we do ask that any agency coming into the ASSET process be organized as a nonprofit, a 501c3 organization. And HRTA is not. As I mentioned, they're organized under a 20E agreement, of which you have a copy of. And so we had a special ASSET meeting last Thursday. The ASSET administrative team looked at the HRTA application packet and felt that it was fully completed, but we did need the ASSET board to consider waiving the nonprofit policy and allow HRTA to come through the ASSET process to provide services under their 2080 agreement arrangement. And this was something that was considered and had been approved by the funder several years ago when Homeward came through the ASSET process. Homeward is an arm of Mary Greeley Medical Center, so it's not organized as a nonprofit, but they are the designated public health entity in the county, and it needed to be part of the process based on the services that they were providing. So the ASSET board looked at the information provided by HRTA. Julia Castillo was available. She's the HRTA director, and answered some questions and gave some statistics that were requested. And the ASSET board voted unanimously to recommend to the funders that HRTA be considered through the ASSET process, since there was no other transportation provider available to provide these services. And so the next step then is we take it to the funders for the consideration of the ASSET recommendation.
Okay.
This seems to me to be a no. This is a program we already fund.
We will.
I'm saying through Heartland, through we Heartland. Previously funded right. this program. Now it's just the program has rolled out of Heartland back to what I view as its parent entity, HRTA. Not talking about changing the program dramatically, not talking about changing our cost. It's a 2080 that we were a party of back in 1981. And so this is, to me, just a question of how Story County will go about funding its portion of this. And to me, when you've got a process like ASSET, it's a no-brainer that you would send a group through this. And if the only thing holding it up is the fact that their designation is not a, you know, 501c3, then to me, this is just a no-brainer, unless I'm missing something.
That's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would move approval of ASSET's recommendation regarding allowing HRTA to be within the ASSET process.
Second that.
It's been moved in second to approve the request from the ASSET request to allow HRTA to be part of the ASSET process, realizing that they are not a not-for-profit entity. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Do you know when this will be on the agenda for the other funders yet, the city, as well as of course, United Way would have to take this before their board as well, and GSB, would they have to do the same thing or not?
I don't believe GSB funds HRSA because of CyRide.
They pay
money to CyRide. You are the first funders asset to obtain this. I'll have to check with United Way and the city. I know we wanted to move on it as quickly as possible because it is also holding up the contract for the current fiscal year. So we want to get that in order. So I will check with those other funders and shoot you a quick email.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make sure, I mean, this is a not-for-profit entity. They're just organized as under a 28E, but it's not like there's a profit.
No, there isn't. As a matter of fact, most of them are losing dollars.
Right.
Many of them. Transportation is really challenging for many of the counties in our region.
That's a good point, Rick, and we do have it specifically stated in the asset policies and procedures that it would be a 501c3. So that's
And that's what I took is we. But I've taken all the way through that this is a not-for-profit entity. It's just organized under 28E.
Right. Correct. Okay, so thank you so much. Okay, and then next on the agenda is the report on fine recovery program. Jessica Reynolds, Latifa, and Shelley Beard from County Attorney's Office.
The purpose of us appearing here today is to update the board on the fines recovery program in the county attorney's office. And there is a handout that Latifa has put together for the board today that she's going to summarize. This program is proving to be very successful, and that is due to Shelley and Latifa, who are sitting here with me today, and their hard work at recovering delinquent fines in the county, as well as victim restitution that hasn't been paid to crime victims. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to the two who've been doing the hard work to recover the money.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so when we started the program back in 2009, since then the program's recovered $1,633,454.85 total in delinquent court debt. That includes court costs, restitution, sheriff's fees. That's everything that we've collected. Since that time, the county's general fund has received a little over $387,000 as a direct result of the county attorney's program to collect. Last year we saw an increase in 43% in our collection to the county's general fund, and on the second page you'll see a 61% increase in the total funds recovered from FY11 to FY12. And from FY10 to FY11, when we were able to add a second person to the program, there was a 270% increase in what we were able to bring in to the county's general fund. So there was a huge impact of adding an extra person to help do the work.
And is it just the two of you now that do this? And tell me one more time. I know you hit this, Latifa. Okay, so we've got... for FY12, we've got just over 200,000 that's coming into the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 76 in victim restitution. Tell me again what the other $700,000 of recoverable that goes to court cost, and where all does that go?
Well, the total that we recover is court costs, sheriff's fees, fines, surcharges, county. I think there's like a county road surcharge, drug surcharges, jail fees, MAD fees, restitution. Of the total that we recover, the county gets 40% of all court costs and fines and attorney fees that are collected. So the $203,000 is 40% of a small percentage of what we collect.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Out of that.
Yeah, the state still gets 60% of, right. of that.
So clearly, as we've ramped this thing up and we've added personnel to go collect these things, I would assume, unless the two of you are making a whole lot different than I would think, I would assume it's not costing us $203,000 to have you in your positions. Clearly, it's ramped up as we've added manpower to this. Seems to me there's got to be a point where you get diminishing returns on the manpower you throw at it. But I'd like to hear from you guys where you think that is. Is there a lot more out there that we could be doing if we had more manpower? Where do we hit that point that we are not seeing that? And are there options other than adding staff members? Is there some kind of contractual help that we can have? Is there just start to talk to us a little bit about where we're going to head from here, or where you guys are going to suggest that we head from here?
Well, I certainly think that there's more that we could be doing with more people. We would see a significant increase. Are there efficiencies that we could then build into what we are doing to see a greater increase? Yes, I think that there are. I'm not sure where we would top out at. I know that there's over $1 million still just sitting out there uncollected in old and delinquent fines and restitution. So I don't see us running out of money to collect. I don't see us running out of delinquent, like old money to collect either. And what we have seen since the program started was our tools for finding people are just getting better and better. So, I mean, it's possible we're going to top off and fall once our tools for finding people get so good that nobody can hide anymore. But I don't see that happening anytime very soon.
We're kind of at a point in the program where there's way more than we can do with two people. It's a lot of money out of there, a lot of people, and so at this point we don't see that end in sight that we might as we increase, collect more fines.
Well, Rick, I think you raised a very important question as we look to the future. You may recall that when County Attorney first brought this proposal to us, looked at, I believe it was Blackhawk County, was one that had been very successful at this, and they had, I don't know whether it was 8 or 9 people involved at that time in that process, and so I think the initial forecast was that we would start looking at this in small chunks for a period of time because of budgetary concerns, and we wanted this to make sure that it was going to be cost effective in terms of how we are approaching it. What we're seeing right here with the addition has shown that we're right on track with some of the earlier projections, but part of the question would be is at what point would it be feasible for us to consider adding, say, one additional person going after that million of delinquency that's still out there? And that's yet to be a discussion, but I do think that you have a very good point that we need to be developing that mindset to look at where we want to be in this whole process. And then the other thing to keep in mind for us is that the state talked about this about three years ago, and there's always that possibility that this may be something that the state might want to step in at some point and take over from individual counties. However, we have been able to prove, like we did and we should have been able to prove in the mental health, that at the local level that we can do a much better job in this particular
area. Yeah, that worked
area.
Out well in mental health.
Yeah.
They'll wait until it's up and running, and they'll step in it.
Oh, yeah, once they see dollars coming in, there's right. no question in my mind. So to me, it behooves us to go get as much of that million outstanding as we can prior to what I think the state stepping in and grabbing it. My question is, for a couple reasons, I would be hesitant to add more staff. Simply because adding staff, it's hard to undo that once you start down that road. You have no space to add staff. In fact, you don't have enough space for your current staff. Is it possible, Blackhawk or anybody else, are they using contract employees? Are they retaining you know, maybe young, hungry lawyers to help them with this based on a percentage of what's collected? I mean, are there other models other than just adding another employee into the mix to work through it? And maybe that's a question you can't answer right now, but I'd encourage you guys to think that through as we go, what kind of alternatives we have other than just adding another staff member, and is it feasible to do something like that?
Great.
We'll ask you to repeat that on the microphone, please. You can go right here. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Some of the changes now is that everything's due immediately within 30 days. So that allows us to start collecting it after 30 days, correct?
90.
90. Okay. But 30, it's due and payable to the state of Iowa. And that used to just not have a deadline. Also, it is, like, increasing terribly. Her just cases alone keep increasing. So as we're also trying to take care of old debt, our new stuff is increasing to collect. And a lot of it is restitution cases. Check cases are just, they're crazy. They're out of control. But luckily, that keeps us all still in a job, too. Now, other things, I think Black Hawk, I think most of those counties are just for employees. I don't know. They do have some attorneys doing it. My concern there would be the cost of an attorney. I don't know if they could work faster. I don't believe so. These girls put in, you know, some pretty serious hours and hard work when they are there. So I don't know that there's any other things. We have found some new search engines for trying to find people. Right now we're sitting on one that's been free. That's been a remarkable hurdle for us, because that's one of the hardest things is finding these people. And the other thing is now we're starting to go back to some of those that are in a position that they don't have a job, or they're trying to skirt around the state, and we're employing some new attorneys currently to help us pull them back in and issue warrants for their arrest, mm-hmm. get them back to the state of Iowa, those sorts of things. Another thing that I do want to point out is a lot of this money also that we're collecting is reimbursable funds for the county. So not only is the county right. getting their $200,000, but we also were able to collect a lot more of our reimbursable expenses that used to just sit there
right.
getting unpaid.
Right.
So.
Great. Thank
yeah.
you.
And I think, Teresa, the only thing that I would address, you talked about the cost of an attorney or an investigator or whatever. If we were able to set something up where we were paying based on a percentage of what was collected, I stop worrying as much about that cost if we do a good job negotiating a percentage. And to me, that should be as simple as figuring out what's it really costing us to go get these dollars. I mean, there's a cost to the county to go get these $200,000 that have come into the general fund. And again, I'm not suggesting that that's the only way to go. I would just encourage you guys to look at that, because I think it'd be easier for the three of us to approve growing this program if it is on a contract percentage kind of basis, because then it's easy to get back out of it when and if we do hit that plateau.
It raises another set of questions that I won't go into at this time, but when you tie a cost of percentage of what you're able to collect to add an additional person, what do you do currently for those that are currently doing the job right now? Do you increase them by a percentage based on that as well? I mean, it opens up a whole new way of looking at how we do things.
Well, yeah, it's changing the structure of the program, where clearly you've got to have in-house, on-staff
right.
administration to get this
right.
done.
Right.
But it also seems to me, without knowing the details of how you guys go about it, there have to be some functions in the process of going to collect dollars that could be farmed out different places. And again, maybe we find out that it's not, but I would assume that we have to use private investigators from time to time. I would assume that there's a mechanism. I'm not talking about you guys. I'm talking about in total of the attorney's office. There has to be a mechanism somewhere out there, if not in Story County and other counties, to be able to do something like this. And again, my only suggestion, Wayne, was that it be something you guys consider as we talk about growing this program. And maybe you come back and say, yeah, Rick, we considered it, and there's no real way to make it work, and the only way to do this is to grow staff, and here's where we're going to put them. We've got a little spot right on the roof where we can put a desk. No. Okay.
All I know is that as the program grows, it requires more and more time from the two of us to continue growing, just to manage what we've got right now, because every person that we have in collections requires special handholding. So they're not just on a payroll plan and then we never talk to them again.
Sure.
There's a lot of back and forth that we have to do with a lot of these people to keep them paying. So
I think it's safe to say that we're at a point right now in the program where there's way more than we can do. I mean,
right.
we know we can be getting a lot more money. We just aren't able to because there's only so many hours in a day.
Well, great discussion. I think it gives us some areas to explore and other options to take a look at, and we'll continue to be receptive to hearing back from you at a later date in terms of how you can see that we can continue to grow in this effort.
Yeah, and I would ask sooner rather than later on the continuation of growth in the program, because I firmly believe there is an end in sight, and that is when the state realizes that they can make more money than it's going to cost them to go get this stuff.
We appreciate your thoughtful comments and your consideration of our...
Thank you for the work you
guys
are doing.
Thank you. Absolutely. All righty. Okay, then moving on to agency reports, I believe we have Mike Cox, our conservation director. Come on down.
Mike?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good.
Hey, excuse me, Renee. Are you going to the United Way cabinet meeting in Newman? See you there then. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Thank you. Well, I guess first off, I'll just start. Seems apropos on the summer we've had that one of the things we were able to get done in our dry weather is wrap up all of our FEMA projects from our floods of 2010. So that was all completed finally. I think we had six different FEMA projects from 2010, and when we finally wrapped up the last one this summer. So that last one was reconstructing an outlet structure on the Hickory Grove sediment basin pond. So that's completed now. Another thing we did at Hickory Grove this summer, if any of you have been to the lake, you'll see that we just completed two new jetties, or we upgraded the fishing jetties that were there. They look fantastic. The public loves them. That was funded through a DNR fish habitat grant. So that was completed and just looks great. Lowered them a little bit. They were a little bit too high. People couldn't, fish quite as well as they'd like. So now the jetties are actually lowered, leveled off. They're ADA accessible, etc. So
wow.
They're very nice addition to the park. Joe Quaker brought in a lawnmower the other day in his report. And I thought about bringing in a goat, but you guys know about the goat project. This was our second year that we've done it at Robison, and it's going really well. We've shifted them around a little bit there in the prairie, and they're doing a good job.
How many do we have?
10. Yeah, just 10. But I did notice the goat using goats is getting more publicity. I just noticed a segment on Sunday morning that Charles Curl was discussing using goats for the same thing that we're using them for, and they do work well. So we'll continue to, I assume we'll look at continuing that next year, still using the goats. We got a group from group of students from Iowa State that are helping us with managing the goats, so that's nice that they can come out and do that. Also at Robison this summer, we did open up a new remote camping area. You might be familiar, a couple years ago that we got rid of our last remote camping area on the Greenbelt, and to some chagrin by people that by the public that really wanted that kind of experience, and we just weren't able to provide it there. So we finally opened up a site at Robeson. You have to hike in a little ways. I think it's about a probably a little over a mile hike back into there, which is what people want. Very nice site back there that we constructed. Overlooks Indian Creek, and just a real quiet site there. So we expect that that'll be a pretty popular. We'd like to, at the same token, we'd like to identify a site on the Skunk River that we can develop the same kind of remote camping. This one's for hike-in, obviously, but we'd like to have one for float-in or paddle-in for people on the river, particularly along the water trail. So we'd like to move forward with that. We also received this year, and I think Joe may have mentioned some of this in his report, but we received Living Roadway Trust grants. He received grants for three projects. Then we also received a grant to hire CCI, so Conservation Corps of Iowa, to do the do some reclamation work at the Prairie Overlook area on Interstate 35. We have a management agreement with DOT to perform some of the area management there, and we haven't really done a lot over the last few years, several years. There is remnant prairie on that site. And so we did get a grant from LRTF to hire a crew to come in and do some reclamation, clear some trees, and then we'll haul them off site. So that's exciting. as far as odds and ends with other field operations, we cleared about a mile section of old fence along the heart of Iowa. It was just totally overgrown, and being an old railroad, you know that we have a legal obligation to maintain fences on both sides. There's no right-hand rule, left-hand rule along the heart of Iowa, so we have that obligation. We completed roughly half of this project last year, and then this year we just did, like I said, about a mile of clearing over some pretty rough terrain, and then so we have gone in and constructed the fence on a portion of that the adjoining landowner was going to use for grazing. We'll go back in the fall and complete the other portion once his crops are out. So that's moving along. You're probably all familiar with the issues we've had at Hickory Grove on E. coli. And so just to address that briefly, you know, we do weekly testing. We test every Monday morning. We get those results either Thursday afternoon or Friday morning. We've had some high readings. At first we thought it was a kind of an anomaly, a spike. We've done some subsequent testing, some more follow-ups, and it's not an anomaly. We've had some first high reading was 2000. We got DNR to go in and then with their own staff and do some testings. Our staff normally does it. DNR confirmed that we do have high readings. Their number was lower than ours. And they did some discrete sampling. Essentially the moral of the story is we have E. coli in the sediment. And the highest readings are at ankle depth water. As you go deeper into the water, the readings drop off dramatically. But with that, the readings are exceeding the state standard for E. coli. And so we are recommending right now that while we exceed those standards, that people not swim. And so we've been in that condition there for probably the last 2 weeks. I expect that we'll remain in that condition for at least for another couple weeks because it's based on a geometric mean, and our mean is still climbing because we still have some lower values in that mean, and as we move forward, we're going to drop off those lower values, so our mean is going to continue to climb. So I expect that'll be the condition for at least another couple weeks. hopefully we'll get that back down very soon.
What kind of things do we do to try to mitigate it? Is it just time? I mean,
the weather certainly doesn't help. This hot weather with no or very little intake to the lake really doesn't help. Lake water temperatures are above normal, have been. Now with this recent rain and cooler weather, it's come down a little bit, but that doesn't help. That really, if you will, that the E. coli, it's incubating in the sediment. So we need to look at, well, hopefully the weather will bear with us and help us to improve that. But we really do need to do some more sampling, determine is this a geese problem, or are there other contributors as well. So we did a little bit of that sampling with DNR. They sampled the water where it comes in at the tubes on 680th. So it comes in from the east side at the tubes, so at the road at 680th where it comes under the road. They had a very low reading, very low reading. So we do need to sample some more sediment at different parts of the lake. We've just sampled sediment at the beach, so we can't isolate that the beach is the only place that has high readings there in the sediment.
If we do determine it's a goose problem, what kind of action would that prompt us to take?
Well, there's a few things that can be done, and DNR has struggled with this. Places all over the Midwest have struggled with this. How do you manage recreational waters that have geese? And they've been fairly successful at Big Creek this year. They hired people with dogs to come out on a regular basis. I think the dogs are there two or three times a day and chase them off the beach. There are other kind of hazing things that can be done. Some places are using strobes, strobe lights. Some places are using fences. It's fences we've tried in the past. It's very difficult to be effectual with a fence. But
if you just train goats to harass geese, then you've got something.
There you go. There you go. There you go. Very good. So I'll continue to keep you posted on that. But we do have we are recommending no swimming at the moment. Another topic that I know is of interest to you is our drainage district program, and I know that Joe gave a report a week ago or a couple weeks ago, and I won't reiterate that, but we are moving along with the drainage district project, and I think last week they billed out about $2,000 in work. So they are getting on the ground and getting some work accomplished with clearing out ditches. Right now they're doing a lot of tree treatments, so essentially girdling and spraying to kill trees, and also doing just some spraying for brush, so foliar spraying. So they are working on that.
Appreciate you staying on top of that.
Well, we'll continue to and recognize the importance of this project. So in addition to, I guess, our field ops, I'm going to try to go quickly here, programs and events. I think most of you are familiar, we did have a significant turnover, if you will, in our EE staff, environmental education staff. We had Linda Zelotella retired, and we had a new position as well, and hired one of our naturalists to go into that natural resource position. So it left us with two new naturalists in a four naturalist department. So fairly significant turnover, but we got some really skilled, talented staff to come in the naturalist positions, and they've done a really good job. We had a very successful summer with our nature camps. We did a caving trip to over near Clinton. We did a backpack trip to that we did in cooperation with Plymouth County, and we did to the Porcupine Mountains in Michigan. We did a float trip on the Des Moines River, and we've done several activities in addition to our nature camps, and all have gone very well. The last couple weeks, our EE staff have been really busy with teacher meetings. So this is the time of year as schools get going that we go out and meet with all the school teachers and develop the schedule for the year. So the last couple weeks we've been doing that. So, and that's been going well. I think another topic that you guys are familiar with, but happened since I think the last time I reported, we did receive or did have two dedications this summer. We had the dedication at Hertz Family Woods. And that's if I didn't mention it before, I think this it's incredible contribution that the Hertz family did. They and I think it might be the first one in the state, but they donated as you may know, a turnkey operation for us. We did had a lot of work to get going with that, and kind of we assisted a little bit with that as we came up on that dedication. But they donated a turnkey park. And they paid for everything that you'll see there on the ground. And so it's a significant contribution, and that's going real well. So the community really likes that park. When and if we can connect that to the bike paths there on the 11th Street, even more of an amenity. So. So that's going well. The other we had was, renaming of the Lekwa Access, and that went very well. It was dedication for that was an incredible event. We had, I don't know, 60, give or take, people at that event, and paddlers were there and many family friends. Significant turnout from the Lekwa family and conservation supporters. So that was very well received and very well earned by the family. Looking forward, we've got our Fall Partners Festival on October 7th. So that's coming up. We've always have two big Partners Festivals. We have a spring and a fall. This is the fall one on the 7th, and the theme is Go Green. And the Jefferson County Green Band, ironically, will be performing. So in addition to the Fall Festival, we've got a lot of other events. We have a fishing tournament coming up at Hickory Grove. We started out with one of those a year, and it's been so successful that now we're doing a spring and a fall tournament, and that's going really well. I think at the spring tournament we had about 25 teams, so teams of two, and just really well received. In fact, tell you a little, there was a team at the spring festival, father son, and they had really never fished before, and saw that we were offering this, and they came out and fished from shore. You know, most teams were in boats, but they came out and fished from shore, and I think we, pun intended, hooked a new convert there. So the boy was just tickled pink that he could come out and fish in a fishing tournament. So,
that's good.
Just wonderful. Speaking of youth, we've been working with the Story County Pheasants Forever on a couple projects, and one is a youth hunt. So we are co-sponsoring a youth hunt with Pheasants Forever, and that's going to happen at Peterson Park. So, again, that's going to be a pretty exciting event, and a great opportunity to mentor young outdoors folks. So the other thing that we're doing with Pheasants Forever is co-sponsoring a bird dog trial. And again, that's going to happen at Peterson Park as well. So both of those are things we haven't done before. Just a nice partnership with Pheasants Forever, and nice ways to get people outside and to get people involved. So, in addition to that, on September 13th, something we have done before but it's coming up is Operation Relief. Are you guys familiar with that? So you know, this is a partnership between us and DNR and Alliant Energy. And so Alliant essentially subsidizes a tree program, tree planting program for their customers, and we manage it. So we have 400 trees that we've put on order, and that's what will be distributed on the 13th. So Alliant Energy customers can buy up to two trees for $25 a tree, and then they come through us, pick them up on that day at McFarland Park. So good program. In exchange for our effort in managing it, we get $4,000 for putting it together, for hosting the program. So it's a good program, and a great way to get some pretty low cost trees planted. So other than that, as you're well aware, we're continue work on the Dakins project. We will have 35% plans by noon on Thursday. We'll get a turnaround on review on those plans, have a review team meeting, and then get in exchange, I guess, the 50% review, 50% plans on September 4th. And at that point, we will have a 50% cost opinion on the project. So we'll provide that cost opinion to you. And that we will continue to refine that as we go forward in design. But essentially, that's going to be the number that we'll get to you for your discussions in later on in TIF funding. So as we refine that, we'll get those new numbers to you. But we'll start our if you will, our basis will be that 50% opinion. We also worked with cities of Slater, Huxley, and Cambridge in Heart of Iowa improvements. There's a pretty active citizen group in Huxley that really wants to capitalize or leverage the High Trestle Trail usage and to get that into the county, more into the county. Our counts from High Trestle Trail traffic was 18,000 people in July. 18,000 people, and that's on the west side. Excuse me, the east side of the bridge, that trailhead. So it's incredible numbers that just keep showing up at the High Trestle Trail, and we've got a lot of interest in the community to start to make some improvements that can get some of that traffic, or some more of that traffic, I should say, further into the county. So Huxley is very interested in it. We would like to solve all of our connectivity problems between Slater and Huxley. We really have one section there that we have to get out onto a road, onto the roads to connect into Huxley. That's just west of Huxley. So we continue to look for solutions there on how we can connect. And we tried to connect in this effort and haven't been able to get, I guess, a minimal agreements with landowners. So shy of that, we still work toward that, but the community was then very interested in paving between Huxley and Cambridge. And so the city of Huxley applied for a REAP grant to do that. We applied for a state recreational trails grant to do that. The understanding is that the cities would provide the match, and that this would be essentially a net zero project for the county. That if we get this grant from recreational trails, then all the match requirement would come from the cities. So no additional GF money into that. That's our premise moving forward with that project. So speaking of REAP grants, we did review our REAP plan. And I think the last time we did that was 06 maybe. So the county's REAP committee did review that, the REAP plan, and then reviewed REAP grant applications from Huxley, as I mentioned, and from Slater also. And Slater's applying for a grant to continue upgrades to their park and their restroom there off of the trail. So hopefully we'll get some funding for those. And then lastly, we did reach a tentative agreement with a landowner in Howard Township to purchase a wetland reserve parcel. It's an 80-acre parcel that will be enrolled very shortly in the Wetland Reserve Program. We worked with the state, DNR, and through a grant that they have and through Story County Pheasants Forever to get an agreement to purchase that property. Again, that's a net zero to the county. The state will provide grant funding for that acquisition. It will be acquired, pending your approval, of course, would be acquired at residual value. And that means the landowner is paid a certain amount to enroll in the WRP program. And then the residual, so the if you will, the what's left after on the property value between what he's paid and what the value is, that's the residual that we have our tentative agreement to purchase it with. So state will pay up to appraised value, and Story County Pheasants Forever came in and filled the gap between appraised value and negotiated price. So again, net zero to the county, that'll be a tremendous addition as we move forward. And again, I look to have something before you guys in the next few weeks to authorize that. So
thank you.
That's it.
Question okay. for you. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. Wayne, I think I mentioned it to you in passing. I know that cities have the ability to set a levy for trails. Do counties have that ability?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
Well, it's not an answer I need right now. It's just something I'd like us to explore.
Maybe since Stephen's here, he can.
Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't.
Cities are.
City. Why don't you come up and put that on the audio for us, please? It's a good question.
Actually, came up question. In the conversation I had with the city of Nevada the other
right,
day.
Right.
They know that they can do it, but the question just came up: can the county do it to put together some kind of master trail plan that we actually have funding to go toward?
You have a number of levies that you raise money for. It's just how you allocate those monies from that levy. That's all. I don't think there is a separate and distinct levy for conservation for a trail.
Yep.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Short answer.
Yeah. No, I wasn't looking for any more than a short
answer. And in regard to the trails plan, that is something that we've done some preliminary work on, and we might be bringing that back to you for funding necessary to complete a trails plan.
Okay.
Good.
Polk County, if you've been watching what's happening in Polk County and their vote.
Voting today, actually.
Vote today on. And I forget what the amount is per household, but
$100,000. They estimated it would be $9 a year for increase. I think it's $80 million. It's in the Des Moines Register today. The article about that.
Talking about a general conservation conservation levy.
Well, they're looking at bonding to pay for a lot of improvements, bank stabilization, improving conservation trails and things of this nature. And one of the arguments, one of the discussions today in the paper was a citizens group was asking whether it would be more cost effective to just increase taxes rather than bonding, because there's going to be an additional cost to pay for the bonding, et cetera. And so But what they're doing is they are probably voting to make it, get it on the ballot, the November ballot, as a referendum. So the citizens will have an opportunity to say that, yes, they would be interested in either moving forward with the bonding or if they want to have some other alternative. I think if it fails, then the Polk County supervisors will look at the alternative of how to go about funding these projects.
Well, that's the point. I don't believe that there is. That's what I was going to say. I don't believe there is such a thing as a special conservation levy. What they're doing is they're opting to bond.
Right.
But then they're going to take some of their other revenues
right.
that they already have. They're going to devote it to paying for those instruments.
Right.
That's the problem.
They're, right.
That's my – I'd have to, I'll look to be sure, but that's
yeah.
my recollection.
Yeah, because they talked about other savings that they have already incurred. They had like 45 staff early retirement that they did not hire back, and so they were looking at trying to generate savings in other ways to stay within budget, because it this would be a major sum for them to go ahead and do that. But it will be interesting to follow where this comes forward. But it does clearly show that conservation was the lead agency in bringing forth this proposal for trail enhancement and bank stabilization and improving water quality. So it might be something that we want to take a close look at in terms of how successful they are moving down this avenue.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thank you.
I just want you to get, after the meeting's over, just for 2 minutes.
Okay. All right. Great. Okay. All right. Departmental reports. Barbara, I think, is probably going to come at a later time. I don't.
I haven't heard from her.
Okay, hadn't heard from her. Okay. Liaison assignments and committee updates. Paul, anything?
Pass.
And pass also. Public forum number 2, comments on the public on items not on the agenda. Anything? Okay. All right. Announcement from the supervisors. Paul?
Pass.
Rick? Let me take this opportunity to announce, really it's more of a congratulations. I just received this yesterday from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and yesterday at their Public Safety Communication annual conference in Minneapolis, a new First Responder Network Authority called FirstNet Board was established. And this is a 12-member newly appointed board, comes under the auspicization of the Department of Commerce and National Telecommunication Information, and Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald was appointed as one of the first charter members of the FirstNet board. And this board will be looking at the interoperability of the broadband network, the public safety broadband network, and he's been mentioning this over the last few years. This act, of course, is his appointment is a staggered 3-year term, and as I look at the representatives here, the board had to comprise 3 public safety professionals as well as members representing the interests of states, localities, tribes, and territories. So it's really a congratulation to Sheriff Fitzgerald for being appointed to this public safety communication network. And I just wanted to acknowledge his leadership in this area.
I know he's been a leader. I think it's called D-Block. Is that right, the whole cell phone?
Yeah.
I know he's been a leader in that, so his appointment makes good sense. And I'll echo your congratulations to him. Well-earned honor.
Okay. So with that, that's all I have at this time.
Move adjournment.
Second.
Been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.